Good morning.
Good morning, sir. If you hold one second, the Honorable Mr. Kiwanis will chair your hearing in just one moment, sir.
Sir, is your mic on? Is your mic on?
Can everybody hear me okay? Can y'all hear me back there?
Sir, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Thank you. Can you state your full name and AEDC number for the record, sir?
James Byron Siegfried, 055339.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 31412A parole hearing to consider regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. I'd like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today. I recognize that this is a telephonic hearing and that you cannot see us, but sitting on the bench, we have the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson, our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright, the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse, and my name is Louis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel chairman for your hearing. I will begin this hearing with a summary. Mr. James Siegfried is 50 years old. He was certified eligible by the Arizona Department of Corrections for 31412A, regular parole, absolute discharge, and home arrest. The crimes of attempt to commit first-degree murder, aggravated assault and burglary in the first degree occurred on or about October 2, 1993. He was approximately 26 years old at the time of the offenses. Mr. Siegfried was convicted by jury trial September 9, 1994. And he was sentenced on October 24th, 1994. His conviction was appealed and upheld on July 8th, 1997. Mr. Siegfried has been 31412A parole eligible since January 30th, 2017. His prison sentences for attempted murder, burglary, and two counts of aggravated assault were concurrent with staggered ERCD and SCD dates. His final sentence end date for all charges is September 30th, 2017. 28 or a little less than 11 years away. I'll read a short summary of the current offenses in question. On October 2nd, 1993, Mr. Siegfried stabbed an elderly man, Frank Rochowski, pardon me, multiple times while Mr. Rochowski was sleeping in a room of a downtown Prescott boarding house where Mr. Siegfried had previously resided. At the time of the murder, Mr. Siegfried had an extensive juvenile record for victim crimes and had also been convicted in prison for multiple counts of armed robbery and multiple counts of residential burglary, as well as unlawful flight. According to Mr. Siegfried's institutional progress report, he has had extensive programming between 2005 and 2014 and a detailed release plan which includes support from his faith community and acceptance at three different halfway houses. He's had a limited disciplinary history in ADC from 1995 through 2014 with his last major upheld on November 21st, 1997 for disobeying an order. Regarding the incident offenses, this is his second hearing before the board. He had a prior prison sentence for armed robbery and flight from a law enforcement vehicle from 1985 through 1992, in which he also appeared twice before this board. The incident offense in which his hearing is dedicated represents an escalation in violent criminal behavior. He has numerous letters of support from friends and family. It should be noted that the Yavapai County Attorney's Office submitted a September 2nd, 2016 letter opposing parole. Mr. Siegfried, this is your first time before most of the members of this board. We'd like to get to know you. Please tell us in your own words about the offense that resulted in your incarceration, sir.
Excuse me, sir, could you repeat that?
Yes, this is your first time before most of the members of this board. We'd like to get to know you. Can you tell us in your own words about the offenses that resulted in your incarceration or imprisonment?
No, sir, I can't.
Okay, sir. First of all, let me state that this board absolutely respects your due process, and I want to make sure that I understand that you have nothing to offer this board in terms of dialogue.
No, sir, that's not what I have to say.
Is there something...
Excuse me, what I have to say is this. You have asked me a question that I have been specifically instructed by counsel not to discuss because it relates to a matter that will be discussed in front of a federal grand jury and in front of a federal civil jury in regard to the ABOEC. That's what I can't discuss with you, sir.
Okay, sir. And thank you for clarifying. Is there anything that you do wish to discuss with this board?
Excuse me?
Is there anything that you do wish to discuss before this board?
Yes, I do have something that I wish to discuss before this board. Can everybody hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Under stern legal advice, my statement will be brief, guarded, and limited to these few lines. Via email, which was sent to you on October 25th, 2017 at 09:15 hours, I presented this committee with a parole plan establishing a proven record of positive rehabilitation, veritable evidence of 24 years productive programming, re-education, and spiritual rehabilitation, which complies with specific criteria established by ARS 41-1604.09b. In fairness, I respectfully voiced my plea for parole before this committee, September 6, 2016. I answered your questions in candor, with clarity, and integrity. I presented this committee with a proven, consistent record of programming and educational and spiritual rehabilitation. I provided more than adequate evidence of family and community support. This committee asked me to explain my involvement in the crimes against Mr. Gorchowski, and as Jesus Christ is my witness, I did so. This committee blatantly called me a liar, despite the fact that Mr. Gray, who dictated my pre-sentence report, can be quoted as saying we will likely never know why James Siegfried committed these acts, because he isn't talking. 9 days sitting through my trial, and the Yavapai County probation officer couldn't tell you why this crime occurred. But 24 years later, this committee thinks it can. One thing I am absolutely certain of, ladies and gentlemen, my 24-year-old dusty record of conviction doesn't reveal why this crime occurred, only that it did. And there were only three people present when it did. One of them is an expatriated U.S. citizen presently on the international no-fly list. That leaves the victim, a man who was too drunk to know what he was doing, and me. What Mr. Gray did not record in his pre-sentence report was that I was under counsel's admonishment at that time not to speak. The sheer insanity which leads this committee to somehow believe I have anything to gain from lying after 24 years is quite frankly beyond absurd. Despite the obvious, this committee chose to discredit my version of events, devalued my positive efforts at education and rehabilitation, and even though these accomplishments are in comportment with statutory requirements, disregarded clear evidence of substantial family and community support, and denied me parole based on loss of human life in an attempted murder case where no loss of human life occurred. Ladies and gentlemen, if I thought there was a chance in hell that this committee's intention today would be honorable, or that your decision would be based on clearly established facts instead of fraudulently created and politically motivated, and politically motivated deliberate malfeasance, my statement might well be different. Your previous actions, however, speak loudly. My family and I refuse to allow your acts of malfeasance and intentional deception to go unanswered, and G. Murray Snow can no longer shield you from litigation. Just to be clear, I chose to attend this hearing today as I have a state statute created right to be here. just as each of you has a state statute created duty to act responsibly. I'm here today because the facts haven't changed. I still meet the established criteria. What remains the subject of federal question is whether the structured decision-making standard permits this committee's intentional fraud to continue. As for whether you grant me parole, I've decided I no longer care. My goal is to face suffering calmly, patiently, and with confidence that God alone is in control of my future. I came to this hearing with the sole purpose to inform you nice folks that anything else I have to say will be testified before a federal grand jury and a federal civil jury. If you have questions about that process, I humbly suggest that you contact Mark Brnovich. I trust he can also explain why the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has subpoenaed audio records of this phone conversation and the September 6, 2016 hearing. Now, ladies and gentlemen, since it was likely decided long before today's hearing was convened, please read your decision. I'm sure it can't be any worse than the crimes you've already committed. Thank you.
Well, thank you, sir, for your very detailed statement. Mr. Board Chairman, before we continue this hearing, I will ask if there's any guidance that's necessary before we continue with our deliberation, in as much that Mr. Siegfried has some very strong feelings and opinions about this hearing.
Honorable Mr. Kouanis, I think that keeping with statutory policies of the state of Arizona, we must continue with this hearing, number one. Number two, I think that hopefully, and I believe that it will be an unbiased hearing. As you know, that three of the board members who are present today was not on this board when he came before this board last year. In fact, I was the only one on the panel at that time. The other board members were not there. But succinctly put, we must continue with this hearing and complete it, and the board must make its determination.
Well, the guidance I'm asking for, Mr. Board Chairman, is if he has nothing further to share with this board, and I will ask him again, what else can be done other than deliberating based on the case that's in front of us?
And that's all we must do. I think that he, if I heard him correct, that he might have something else to say, but that's all that he wished to say, because certain things will be before a federal court, according to him. But that's beyond us. We, as a board, we cannot make a determination based upon what is before the federal
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
If they ask me a question that I can answer without violating anything that I've made an agreement to testify about, then I can speak on it. But if it's anything that I have every intention of testifying before a federal grand jury or a civil jury, I will not speak on it. And I will notify you that I will not speak on it.
And I think that's fair, and I accept that 100%. I think that any questions that we have, we can raise them. And if you don't feel comfortable in responding to them, sir, then just tell the board and we will move on, sir.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I will speak to any of the other three members of the board with candor, with clarity, and with integrity. But any further conversation with you, because I will be testifying against you specifically at the federal grand jury, I will not speak with you any further.
That's your right, sir.
Okay, sir, I will begin by asking you this, and that is, you've taken quite a bit of programming.
Yes, sir.
What are your plans should this board vote to release you on general parole or home arrest?
Well, my initial plan, sir, as my parole plan attempted to explain, was that I intended to attend Milestone's halfway house because it is a very structured, very well-guided program that I believe will allow me to comply with each and every one of the rules set forth by the parole board. I believe that it will allow me to focus what I intend to be my future plans both with employment and with spiritual guidance. I have been in regular contact with Milestones, with the pastors there, and I believe that they all are in favor of what I plan to do, and that is to become part of the process of keeping people from coming to these places, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Excuse me?
I said thank you. Is there any particular employment that you're pursuing for your post-prison life?
Well, yes. One of the reasons that I got so many college degrees was that because what I want to go into to home inspection. I have discovered through the course of my studies that the American Society of Home Inspectors will certify ex-felons to be home inspectors and then train them to be home inspectors. And the requirement was that they had to have an associate's degree, at least. And so I got two of them, plus 9 trade certificates, all in areas and fields which have to do with housing, like HVAC, masonry, concrete finishing, even landscaping and horticulture, because it has to do with the soil and structure and runoff around homes. I've focused all of my attention, my attention on that, because that's what I wanted to do.
Thank you, sir. Just 1 second. According to your history and aims, as I stated in my summary, you haven't had a major infraction since 1997, which is to be commended.
That's not exactly true, sir.
Well, I'm going by the Ames record, sir, and I'm
right.
commending you
right.
for
well,
something that happened 20 years ago.
I actually had a couple, but I won them in court, and they were dismissed. I just wanted to make that clarification. It's not that I didn't have them. It's that they were there, and they were improperly done, and I won them based on adequacy of proof, which means they had to be removed from the record.
The last major infraction I have in Ames is November 21st, 1997. This is disobeying an order, guilty, major, privilege lost.
Right.
There's nothing in here about it being expunged. So are you saying that
okay,
was expunged?
That one wasn't. I'm just saying that there were a few others, but they got corrected. That's what I'm saying, sir.
Thank you, sir. Again, we have numerous letters of support from friends in the community. Are any of those individuals available today? Did you have anyone that you intended to call in, or is anyone attending this hearing today?
All the people that intended to call made phone calls to the parole board. My mother is deathly ill on her deathbed. She is suffering from a brain hemorrhage and has recently had a stroke, and it's impossible for her to be there. The rest of the people, after last year's fiasco, probably wouldn't show up if I asked them to.
Probably wouldn't show up if you asked them to, because why?
Because they have no faith in the decisions that this board puts out, sir. They were not there last year, but they were evidence of everything that happened at that board in writing. And they know what happened at that board was fraud. And so they have no faith in what this board can do.
So at this point, I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions for you, in particular, the Honorable Mr. Johnson and the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse, who you've not
Thank
appeared
you.
Before in the past.
Thank you.
Fellow board members. Mr. Johnson?
Good morning, sir. Just a couple of questions. You just made a statement that your mother was ill. And is your mother Vivian Rutgers Wells?
Yes, sir, she is.
Okay, sir. In your proposal, you have her listed as your primary sponsor. Is that changing?
That has not changed. She and my stepfather are my primary sponsors. They are my only living relatives left.
Okay. And throughout your statement, I know that you have there's several comments that refers to feel as though you should have a parole to absolute discharge. Can you explain that to me?
I'm not exactly sure what statement you're referring to, sir. I did not say that in the statement that I just made. I might have said that in a document that was prepared on the 26th of September last year, but I didn't say it in my parole packet, and I certainly didn't say it in the statement that I just made today. I did sign a document from DOC that has three boxes on them. One of them was absolute discharge.
Okay, sir, I'm sorry. This is a document from September 26th of 2016.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So let me take a pause here and just ask, since you have the document in your hand that was written and sent to Doug Ducey, does that seem to indicate for the record that the state of Arizona actually received that document? What's the title of the document, sir?
The title of the document is your proposed release, the proposed release plan.
The proposed release plan?
Yes, sir. It's doesn't say whether who was actually sent to us, when it was sent to the board. It is it's a notarized document, sir, that was signed on the 26th day of September.
By Vivian E. Rucker?
Right.
Is that the one?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so for the record, what you're saying is then is that that document, which you say was signed on September 26th, on the front page is called an application proposal for community trust parole or absolute discharge, seeking private contractual relief of an eligible, rehabilitated Arizona prison inmate. Is that what it says?
So I have pages 9 through 14, so I can't tell you what the...
Thank you, sir. That's convenient that they only gave you 9 through 14 of that document. Thank you for admitting that you received it. Go ahead and ask your question, please.
Well, in this document, sir, it only talks about parole and absolute discharge. So I was asking, is that your statement? Is that you feel as though you should only be, at this point in time, that you should get an absolute discharge?
Sir, I believe that statute entitles me to either absolute discharge, home arrest, or parole generally.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That is what I'm here seeking. If this board sees fit to grant me one of those, then I'm willing to accept one of those.
Okay, and I see that, you know, in here that there's
Excuse me?
I was just saying in here, I see in here that you have obtained several parts of it. Sir, can I just ask you a question? You may or may not want to answer this question. So, I understand that you received quite a bit of programming since you've been incarcerated.
Yes, sir.
So, can you tell me between today, now today, and the time that this alleged incident occurred, can you tell me, you know, how you changed, anything like that, the difference in your personality or how you changed from that time to now, sir?
Well, I think to answer your question, sir, one of the biggest changes was as a result of taking a course called Rational Emotive Therapy.
Mm-hmm.
I may come across today as rather outspoken and maybe even slightly angry, but today compared to 24 years ago is a complete 180. 24 years ago, if you had looked at me the wrong way, I probably would have snapped. Through rational emotive therapy and learning how to control things that come about in daily life, or in my daily life, I have learned that the pen is mightier than the sword, and I know how to use my pen. I know how to use my pen a lot better than 98% of the people in this world. I don't get violently angry. I haven't gotten violently angry in years. My record of disciplinary violations should attest to that. I have had no violence, period, recorded in my entire 24 years of incarceration. I don't get in argumentative spats with people. If I have issues, I drop grievances because, like I said, my pen is mightier than my sword. If you want me to talk about, I mean, the obvious things, any idea that I am the same person I was 24 years ago would be absolutely absurd. There's no possibility that that would be the case. I have had, you have a packet in front of you that has a few things that deal with anger management, substance abuse, and the various programmings that are available in the Department of Corrections. I have been incarcerated through the course of three different classification systems. Each one of those classification systems had its own idea of what everybody had to participate in, what courses we had to take in order to comply with the classification at that specific time. And each time those things were made available and required of us, I took each one of those. I've never refused a single solitary program. And I've completed every programming available through three classification systems. So I've been in numerous alcohol and drug programming, even though I wasn't involved in a crime where I was drunk or on drugs. I've taken anger management classes. I've taken parenting classes, but I have no children. I've taken thinking straight, cognitive restructuring, all of these classes, not because so much I had to, but because when I took the course in rational emotive therapy, I learned a long time ago, way back in 95, 96, and 97, that my thinking is what got me here. My choices, my decisions are what got me here. And the only way I was going to get beyond that is if I learned every possible thing that I could in order to make sure I don't make these mistakes again. I spend my time in here still today reading Awaken the Giant Within because Anthony Robbins seems to be the king of neuro-linguistic programming so we can teach ourselves how not to make the mistakes that we make. I read this book religiously at least twice a year. It's so old that the pages are turning yellow, but I still read it because in there are the things that are going to keep me from making the choices that I've made in my past. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir. So also in here, sir, I know that there's some information that prior to this incident occurred, and I know that my colleague kind of alluded to it prior to that, that prior to this incident occurring, that you did have a violent criminal history prior to that. Are you, that included robbery and multiple counts of robbery and multiple counts of residential burglary?
No, sir.
That's not
no,
true.
Sir. There are no counts of residential burglary. Both charges from the previous conviction, there was only one conviction. It was Yavapai County case number 11349.
Okay.
There was only one case, and the conviction in that case was two counts of armed robbery and one count of unlawful flight.
Okay. Can you tell me what that was about, sir?
That was about a little boy seeking attention the wrong way.
Okay.
that was about some bad choices made by a kid who had spent the last 5.5 years in a foster care system, 13 foster homes, with abuse, with a whole lot of things that I really, really don't care to get into, because try as I may, I have still had a hard time, even this many years later, dealing with the kinds of things that happened in those foster homes. I was taken out of my mother's home as a child because I was being abused. They put me in foster homes where they continued to abuse me on a daily basis. And somehow or another, that young man who committed those crimes in that first case thought that he could do something to make somebody pay attention. And they didn't. They put me in prison. That doesn't make it their fault. I made the choices. I committed the crimes. I acted out. I did what was stupid. I don't know what else I could have done. I mean, I'm 50 years old now. At the time those crimes occurred, I was 17 years old. As a 17-year-old, I had no other guidance. The guidance that I was supposed to get was the guidance that was abusing me. What choice did I have? I don't know. But I do know today that even those choices, like the choices in 930546, the charge I'm faced here with today, the choices were bad. And that's why I've spent so many years studying the things that I need to study to help me not make these bad choices. That's why I'm not asking you to send me home. I'm asking you to send me to a halfway house called Milestones, which is going to help me continue to make the proper choices. Does that answer your question, sir?
That kind of answers my question, sir, but I do thank you, though. I'm going to I'm going back to some other information, sir. There's a letter in here that's directed to the board. It's dated August 14, 2017. Do you know what I'm referring to, sir?
One more time on the date?
August 14, 2017. It's a letter directed to the Board of Executive Clemency. It's from you.
Okay, hold on. I'm getting my copy so that I know what you're referring to.
All right.
Okay, I'm looking at a letter directed to you on August 14, 2017.
Okay, and I'm actually looking at like the third paragraph in that letter, sir.
The cruel and violent manner?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
And as you state, I can tell you that the circumstances of this very serious crime has plagued you for each of, is this 9,000, I can't really, 9,766 days?
That's 8,766 days.
All right, I couldn't tell if that was an 8 or a 9, sir. Okay. The concern, one of the concerns that, at least me as a board member that I have, sir, is the fact that trying to understand your mental state at that time and understand what's going on now, whether, you know, if you were out, if there's something that triggers you that would, you know, cause you to, you know, be involved in those crimes. And I kind of hear you just say that you weren't drinking at the time. You didn't say you weren't drinking, that you said you wasn't intoxicated or under the influence of drugs. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct, sir. Okay. There is evidence in the record that I had a red beer the night of the crime. Red beer is made with non-alcoholic beer and tomato juice or Clamato. Okay. Beyond that, no, I was not drinking and I was not on drugs.
Okay, so there were some horrible things that happened to you, kind of basically as you were describing when you were in foster care and foster home.
Yes, sir.
When you were out prior to this, when this incident occurred, what was it that triggered the instability in your mental or emotional state?
Okay, sir. We're getting very close to one of those issues where I can't speak because it's a matter of federal investigation. However, I will attempt to answer your question in the best possible manner without stepping on that issue.
I don't want you to step on that issue, sir. You certainly have a right of having an appeal.
I understand that, and that's why I'm going to try and answer your question. A year ago, when I faced this board, I tried to explain the circumstances which precipitated the crimes which occurred to Mr. Gorchowski. When I offered my explanation for what occurred, this board, excuse me, I should say, only one member of the present board called me a liar. When this crime occurred, the victim was doing something to one of my relatives, the very same relative who is now listed as an international threat and on the no-flight list as a expatriated citizen from the United States. That young man was in a position where he was being technically offended by the victim. I can't even begin to understand why this board would not believe that 24 years later, as if I have something to lie about. But that is the case. What precipitated the crime, his activities, the fact that he was placed in a position to do what he did by authorities in the county, the fact that they hadn't done anything to him for his previous drunken escapades, the fact that he was trying to violate my nephew in one of the very same ways that potentially I was violated when I was in foster care. All of these things that precipitated this, the attitudes or the demeanors or the, they were, at the time the crime occurred with Mr. Gorchowski, parts of my life, parts of my history, which I had not dealt with myself. I was placed in a position the night this crime occurred to have all of the previous events of this life explode in my life. How was I supposed to respond? Apparently, I was supposed to call 911. You're talking about calling 911 to somebody who has lived a life of being told never to call on a cop, never to trust a cop. Now, today, 24 years later, I have to tell you that I should have called 911 instead of attacking Mr. Gorchowski. That would have been the best choice, the best decision. 24 years ago, that was not my teaching, my upbringing, or my mindset. Tomorrow, 911 is going to be standing on my doorstep. Because I don't want any part of that, and I don't want any part of this. This is not the place where I expected to live the rest of my life because I was making bad decisions. I don't know how else I can answer that question.
So I understand what you're saying, and I thank you for answering that question in the form that you did. So I see in your parole plan you do have several churches and pastors that are in support of you, and I know that my colleague Mr. Quinones asked you about this earlier, but however, why aren't, you know, you said that they're not here because they believe that this board is I can't think of the exact word that you used, but that there was no faith in this board, sir. But they're not coming to the board because they have, you know, no faith in the board. They're coming to the board to be a supporter of yours.
Oh, they are 100% supportive of me, and they will be testifying in court when that time comes. They sent you notarized documentation. Okay. If you doubt their existence, feel free to call them. Their numbers are all on the documentation.
Sir, I don't doubt their existence. I was just simply trying to get a full understanding that if they're 100% supportive of you, and you say they'll testify before a federal grand jury or a federal court, why wouldn't they be here to testify on your behalf now, sir? Some supporters, I know that.
Your mom is ill,
and your stepfather, sir, is not able to be here. I don't know if he's ill. How old are your parents, sir?
My mother is 77 and my stepfather is 67, sir. They're both extremely ill. They live up north, off-grid.
Okay.
And they've been ordered by their doctors not to travel. Neither of them can drive, and they can't afford to pay for somebody to drive them to the hearing.
Okay. That's totally understandable, sir, that they can't be here. I was just kind of concerned about the others. But if they're both ill and both are having medical issues, sir, how could they be your major sponsors?
Because they're my family and they love me.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be my major sponsors. What other answer would you like me to give you, sir? That you think they're going to run in circles around the merry-go-round?
No, sir.
I'm not asking them to do anything that the family wouldn't do naturally on their own.
Absolutely, sir. I'm just trying. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
My major support system is not my family directly.
Okay.
You're reading a document that was sent to the governor asking the governor in third party to correct the fraud committed by this panel, sir. That document was not presented to you for this hearing, but it was sent to the governor, and the governor defaulted on that notification. He was given 30 days. The reason there is a court hearing going to be held in this case is because the governor defaulted on a request from a private third party to correct the fraud committed by this panel.
Okay.
The documents you got, you weren't even given a full copy of by the governor's office.
Well,
but you're going to use that document and its wording in that document in some form against me, which I don't understand, but you're welcome to do whatever you want, because this recording will be subpoenaed. It's already issued. The subpoena is already there. That's fine.
Okay, sir. That was one of the documents. The document that I'm referring to right now is a document,
yes, sir,
which I told you is dated August 14th, 2017,
right,
and it's a letter from you that's directed to the board.
Yes, sir.
So that is, I think, the most recent document that we've received from you. And
yes, sir.
Part of your support system in this document is your family, friends, and members of your church community.
Yes, sir.
Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
My support system is my family, my friends, and members of the community.
Okay.
I have asked this board to put me in a halfway house. If you'll notice the parole plan, let me pull up the copy of it. The parole plan specifically lists. Here, let me grab the copy. I'm sorry, sir, but it's stashed in an envelope. The parole plan lists as my number one address, Milestones, Church on the Streets, Pastor Walt Ratway. Okay? He is my support system. I'm asking this board to put me in a halfway house that is controlled and structured, that I can't leave unless I leave in the presence of one of the members of the halfway house. The reason I'm asking for that is to ensure that I'm always monitored. I didn't ask you to send me to my mother's house, and I'm going to tell you why. My mother lives off-grid. My mother lives in the woods where mountain lions, bobcats, and coyotes and rattlesnakes constantly attack her, and she has guns at her house. I didn't ask this board to send me to my family support system because I know there are guns there, and my family will not relinquish those guns, and this board will not send me where there are guns. That's why I didn't ask you to submit my mother's house. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir. I'm just going, looking at the statement that you have on there. You're absolutely right. It lists Milestones Church on the Street as your number one release. It lists Omega House as your number two. It lists traditional transitional living as number three. And it lists alternatively your parents' home at 22455 Consable Lane. And is this Paulden, Arizona?
Yes, Paulden, Arizona. And you'll notice that I listed them in succession. If I can't go to Milestones, then I want to go to Omega. If I can't go there, then Traditions. And each one of those people are willing to take me. I put them in that order because I wanted this board to know that I was specifically not asking to go to my mom's house unless absolutely necessary. Because I know that there are things there that are going to cause issues with the parole.
Okay. All right, so I don't have any additional questions at this time. Thank you.
You're welcome, sir.
Mr. Siegfried, this is Louis Quinones again, the panel chairman.
Yes, sir.
I haven't had a chance to listen to the dialogue between you and my fellow board member. And I have a couple of follow-up questions. One is, you mentioned more than once the expression off the grid. What do you mean off the grid?
My mother and stepfather live in a place where there is no phone line coming to the property. Their phone is a 1-800 satellite Medicare phone. They live in a place where there is no power coming to the property. They live in a rural farming district, and they choose not to have connections to society that require an economic tied to the community. They want to be self-sustaining. They want to be self-sufficient in life. And there's a choice that they've made, and they've been living it for 45 years. And I have to respect that idea because that's what they've chosen to do. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. And another question I have is, you made reference to, well, let me ask this question just in context. These are your natural parents?
My mother is my natural mother. My stepfather lives with her, yes.
I think you said something to the effect that they are under constant threat of, I'll just say, wild animals?
Yeah, anybody who lives in northern Arizona, out in the woods, is constantly having to deal with rattlesnakes. For some strange reason, my mother and stepfather built their house on top of a rattlesnake den, and every year they kill 10 or 12 snakes in and about their house. They have livestock on the property, and there are tons of mountain lions and coyotes and bobcats in the neighborhood that like to come and raid their chicken pen or raid their ducks or raid their goats or whichever one is being attacked at any given time. And so, yes, they have a constant threat of livestock up there.
Okay, sir. I would just say, as one voting board member, profound respect for everyone, let alone individuals appearing before this board. I don't know what's in your heart. What I do know is that you do have a history in DOC. You have past arrests. You mentioned that you had a prior conviction for armed robbery and flight from law enforcement. You're in the prison system now for attempt to commit first degree murder, attempt, burglary, 2 counts of aggravated assault. These sentences have an end date. Your ultimate SED, as I mentioned in the summary, is September 30th, 2028. So you're not in prison for life, for natural life, for death. You're in prison with a sentence that has a clear end date. So I'll ask you, in your words, why do you think you're owed general parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge?
Sir, I don't think I'm owed anything. I think that, like every other person who is sentenced to prison, he has to earn those things. He has to do the things that are required of him. He has to conform with the programming that is issued to him. He has to attend the classes with the intent of gaining something from them, because it's the criteria set up by the Arizona Department of Corrections director to become eligible for parole. I never sent to you or to this committee in either verbal or written form that I'm owed the right to parole. I did make light of the fact that I meet the criteria because I earned that right to meet the criteria by performing the necessary tasks set before me, and I think in some cases by excelling in earning some of the things that contribute to my rehabilitation. But I don't believe that I or anybody else that comes before this board is owed anything. I believe each of us has to earn it, sir.
Well, sir, here's the question. I think this is going to be a difficult one. Because I'm only going by how things sound. That's why I said, I don't know what's in your heart. I will say, there is, from my perspective, as one voting board member, an independent voting board member, and by the way, we did not discuss this case before we came before this board. This decision was not made before we came into this room. This board has tremendous integrity. But I will ask, there is an almost explosive anger that I'm hearing. And more than...
Excuse me.
Hold on, sir, I'm not done. What I'm saying is, I'm listening to you, I'm looking at your institutional record, I find it very meaningful. Your programming, very meaningful. Your release plans, your support from a church community, your plans to possibly live in a halfway house, very meaningful. The fact that you have not had discipline in these recent years, very meaningful. But there's a demeanor that's unnerving to me as one voting board member, because I've listened to many cases. I've listened to many parole hearings, many revocation hearings, many absolute discharge hearings, etc., pardons. Listen to a wide variety of people, listen to a wide variety of cases. And there's a demeanor that sounds uncomfortably angry to me. I understand the frustration. I'm not saying you have no right to be frustrated by any shape of the imagination. But if the things that happened in your distant past related to crime, or the crimes that I mentioned, when you say you're a different person than you were then, and you say that you're a changed person now, I'm certainly not hearing a very calm person, and I'm not sure what to make of that.
No, sir. You're hearing a frustrated and disgusted person.
Fair enough, sir. I'll ask my fellow board member if they have any further questions. Yes, sir, Mr. Johnson.
So, sir, some of your letters in here that you have certified letters, have you saved up any income since you've been incarcerated, sir? Do you have a...
Excuse me, can you repeat that?
Have you saved up any income? Do you have the ability to gain income since you've been incarcerated?
Have I saved up any income? How would I do that, sir?
Well, some inmates, you know, come and they save income. Some of them have worked over the years that they've actually been incarcerated and managed to, in different ways, have some income. So I'm just asking, do you have any income?
Some inmates are given the opportunity to work in places like ACI where they're allowed to make money. other inmates are given an opportunity to work on the yard, sweeping and picking up trash based on their crimes, based on the seriousness of their offenses. And then when they go to the commissary, they're given convenience store prices. In order to survive, you have to buy hygiene, you have to buy soap, you have to buy toothpaste, and you have to buy the necessities at convenience store prices. If you're only earning pennies, saving money, as you put it, is not as easy as if you're getting a minimum wage or something akin to it in an ACI setting where you're working for hours. I haven't been one of those people that's been allowed to work at ACI because of the nature of my crimes. Do I have access to money? Given the opportunity, yes. But I can't go get my money until I'm off parole, sir.
Okay, so I'm just trying to understand that, because there is a letter in here that's from his stepfather, Mr. Sackfields. Is that right? Did I say that right?
Mr. Who?
James B.
Sackfields. That would be me.
Okay.
James Siegfried?
It says it's a letter dated June 25th, 2016. I guess it's Carson Wells, that's who signed the letter.
Right.
Okay. And then I'm just trying to just make sure and understand that if you were released, that you're able to do it. But in this letter, it just states in there that they are living, him and your mom are living on a limited income, and they cannot give you any financial support, but let me just read it so that I can make sure.
Sir, I can save you the trouble. I'm familiar with every word of that letter.
Okay.
I am not asking my family for support.
Okay.
I am my own human being, and if I need what I need, I will earn it my own self, sir.
All right. Well, I'm just trying to just understand, because there has to be some financial support system in there. If you have no support, in order for you to be successful, and some of the programs.
Well, right. I intend to get a job and support myself. I'm an educated individual with countless trades that I can fall upon, sir.
Okay. So a lot of your support is in the religious community. At least one of the programs I know that that you applied for causes for some financial input before there. The letters indicate that you are basically general letters that we see in where someone has requested to participate in that program and they accepted them in that program. But you do understand, sir, that if you were released, your placement would solely be the responsibility of the parole office where you would actually be placed at, or if you would even be placed in any of those programs. This board has no authority to place you in a specific program. Do you understand that?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, sir. I think that's going to get it for me. Thank you, though. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Mr. Siegfried, I had a couple of more follow-up questions. And one is that you were accusing this board of fraud. But what exactly do you mean? I mean, that's a crime. Fraud's a crime. What fraud?
Sir, I was denied parole 14 months ago for loss of human life in an attempted murder case. You want to know why I'm frustrated and disgusted? It's because the people who the state has entrusted me, my life, my future with, would so blatantly commit a federal felony criminal act and sit here today, 14 months later, and act as though they don't even know that it existed. This is where this frustration and this disgust that you hear in my voice comes from. This is the crime, which I have referred to numerous times as fraud, that this board committed. This is the crime which will be testified about in a federal grand jury hearing and in a federal civil hearing.
Okay, so which leads me to my next question, and that is, you sound like you have legal counsel, correct, sir?
Excuse me?
You have legal counsel? Do you have legal counsel?
Certainly.
Okay, I am curious, why is your legal counsel not supporting you on this hearing today?
You want to know the answer to that question, sir?
It's a you don't have to answer.
I'm sorry.
You don't have to answer.
Noises, is it? Are you guys still there?
Excuse me, sir?
Are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You asked me if why my legal counsel is not at this hearing today. Is that what you asked me?
Yes, sir.
Because at this very moment, my legal counsel is standing before the United States Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals giving a dissertation in this case. They can't be here today because they're somewhere else giving a statement before the court.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Siegfried, we're getting close to the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement you would like to make before we go into discussion? Well, we ask that you don't repeat yourself, but this is your hearing. And is there anything else you'd like to share?
No, sir. I'm pretty well voiced on exactly what's going to happen now, so I have nothing more to offer.
Thank you, Mr. Siegfried. Board is going into discussion now. It may sound like we're discussing this case with you, especially because we're on the telephone, but is the board discussing the case amongst itself? Before we come to our individual votes, as independent voting members? We will come back to you shortly with our decision after we go through deliberation and vote. Thank you, sir. For the board members, I'd like to begin the discussion by stating that during my interaction with Mr. Siegfried, I was sincere in stating that he has done considerable programming. He has a detailed release plan. There is some question as to whether or not he can fund his first months should this board vote for general parole or home arrest. And again, I do find it meaningful that he's had limited discipline inside the Department of Corrections. I absolutely respect his due process. Frankly, I respect the emotion that he has coming into this case, but I'm having a struggle with his attitude. And this is not to say that his attitude is enough as a standalone issue to deny one of the options. I'm just not quite sure what to make of it, and that's where I'd like to begin the discussion. And I'm certainly open to the wisdom of my colleagues. Oh, yes, sir.
Mr. Quinones, each of us are appointed to this panel as citizens, certainly as human beings.
I'm sorry, but whoever's speaking, I cannot hear them.
Each of us was appointed to this panel by the governor as private citizens, certainly as human beings, and part of our responsibility is to weigh each individual case and listen to what the person being heard has to say. Certainly in our minds, we compare it with other cases we've heard, not necessarily the details, but the how the hearing goes, the person's sincerity, attitude, and that's what we're responsible to do here. And as a human being, at the beginning of this hearing, I have to say, I found it offensive that the first thing that happened is I'm being accused of something I wasn't even here a year ago. And it's very difficult to then step back from that when I have felt that I was attacked. Nonetheless, I'm trying to set that aside. I do know, as Mr. Quinones just noted, there's been a lot of programming. I think that's very good. There's been good behavior in the prison. That's very good. I'm having a hard time with the attack, the initial attack. And I'm also reading on page 11 of 14 of the document that was sent to Governor Ducey. And there's a quote at the bottom of that page. It says, "If given this opportunity, James will successfully complete the balance of his sentence on parole or successfully reintegrate into society if this honorable governor chooses absolute discharge instead, which would be the prudent choice in light of the parole board's recent felonious activities." I can't see that as anything but almost a threat. I just cannot get past it, this anger. I'm hearing anger, and I understand there's frustration. I completely understand that. But I'm concerned that how are we to know if this individual is released into society, that anger won't erupt again as it did at the time of the crime. So I'm concerned with that. In spite of the fact, it seems like this individual has prepared himself physically through the programming and the lack of discipline, but mentally he hasn't prepared himself, and emotionally he hasn't prepared himself to live in society. So, but I'd be also interested to hear other input from my fellow board members.
I'm going to go ahead and ask fellow board members, but I do want to interject that while you were speaking, he was laughing, and that in and of itself sounds unstable.
Excuse me?
Mr. Johnson, do you have anything that you would like to add?
Are we in discussion?
Yes, we're in discussion.
Okay. I just feel like, after looking at all the information that we've learned, this parole packet, the letter that's dated and sent to the governor really lists his parents as being the primary sponsors. However, after speaking with him and listening to him, his parents aren't able to be the primary sponsors. Stepfather, says that they will do all they can to give him advice, which is the sponsor they can give. His mother's ill. The stepfather is ill. There are some letters in here from the church. Although we were not a part of the hearing that he had over a year ago, we were not a part of that hearing. But my concern is that he states and talks in the letter that he wrote and that was wrote to the board as well as the governor, that he was the victim as a child, which is really sad. As a child, he lived in and out of several foster homes. He was subject to abuses while he was in those homes, and we don't know, he hasn't really talked to us about what occurred and caused this incident, what triggered his attitude to make that happen. He did make some statements as to his nephew and what the victim may have been doing at the time. However, we weren't here a year and a half ago or whatever it was that to discuss and talk about that, but I do have some genuine concerns because he has some triggers that could cause him to be involved or go off, and I haven't seen any of those. And coupled with the fact that in the letters, in one of the letters on at least Tradition's House, you know, there's a cost for Tradition's House that you have to have up front before you can actually get into that program. I'm not sure about the Mega House or Milestone Church, Church on the Street, but you know, you have to be able to work and do some things in order to be able to get in there. And I'm just not comfortable with seeing that those things. He hasn't saved up any income, which it may be hard to save up some, but we've seen numerous inmates come in with some type of savings that they've actually saved up to make sure they can get into the program. The letters from the churches that I see in here are very standard letters that we see come in involved in it, so I haven't seen anything that personal. There's some letters from some pastors that have been involved in some programming inside the institution. However, at this time, I'm just not comfortable with not really having an understanding of what triggered those, and I do understand what he stated has caused him to have some hostility in life because of what has happened to him in his past, but I'm not concerned about not having anything that may psychologically, you know, trigger him if he's released back out and has that problem, that he may not harm someone out there in the community. So that's just my feeling and talking with him and getting an understanding of what he has. And he doesn't, you know, he has some family support from his mom and his stepfather, but he has no other family. According to him, he has no other family that's here that could assist him. And there's no strong indication to me, understanding that there's a strong family support other than that. And I'm going to tell you something that even concerns me even more of it, is though he speaks of his parents and them being a support system. Will it help him? But his mother's ill, and his father's is ill, and his father wrote a letter. But not one time did I hear him say anything about wanting to get out and assist or help or try to take care of them since they're ill. That concerns me. That in all the communication of what we just heard, he talks about them being a support system, they're supporting them, but they're ill. The elderly and they're ill. And not one time did I hear him mention anything about wanting to get out, to take some time out, to help his mother or his father who walk to him, and they live up, as he say, I don't know, right, or he said off track or off something where they live at, but he never mentioned anything about trying to get out to be an aid or assistance to them. That bothers me about whether he's able to really adjust and be out there for society, but that he's not one time mentioned anything about trying to assist, aid, or help his elderly mom or stepfather, which they both are not financial position to be able to help him.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Dr. Wright?
My statement is going to be very brief, and that is, and I'm not being defensive when I say this, but I'm going to say it and iterate, and I believe that the records would reflect this. Since being on this board, since April of 2014, I can say to the best of my knowledge, I have never referred to a defendant or a victim as a liar. And I resent that has been said of me. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Before I make my motion, I do want to say this too, and let me just kind of slow down and choose my words. I do find that Mr. Siegfried has treated this quasi-judicial body with disrespect today. And I think it's an indication of his behavior. And it is what makes me uncomfortable about returning him, about the possibility of making a safe return to the community, which is one of our obligations. And that is to consider public safety, the interests of victims, rights of inmates. But we look very hard and we work hard at safely returning people to the community, making the best decisions we can based on the information that is gathered in the totality of a case file and a hearing and an interview. And I cannot in good faith, support regular parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge. So I'm going to go ahead and make my motion and see where it falls. And that is, my motion is to deny regular parole, absolute discharge, home arrest, and Mr. James B. Siegfried, ADC number 55339. And I will also, I'll double check on the dates here, but ask for a 1-year set off. The reasons are as follows, and I will ask for the input of my colleagues just to make sure that we're on the same sheet of music. But serious and violent offense, trauma to the victim, age of the victim, serious bodily injury, prior criminal history, repeat offender, poor demeanor during hearing, and I will ask for input regarding release plan and community support system. We may be interpreting that differently.
No funds available,
on the release plan.
On the release plan.
Thank you.
And then also, parents as sponsor, and there's no way virtually to contact them because they have no phone. You'd have to drive there in order to contact them.
I'm hesitant to check no family community support system as much that he has letters, but I can check on other...
lots of community support. It's just that the primary sponsor is really not available.
Can I?
Yes, Mr. Johnson.
I'm not sure that I want to put any court demeanor during hearing, although we may not be agreeable to what he says or what he's doing. He has not been disrespectful to this board during the hearing. He may not have been responsive to all the questions as we asked. He's made some allegations that we all may take offense and disagree with. However, I wouldn't list that as being a poor demeanor during the hearing.
I'm willing to strike that based on the input of my colleagues. I found his behavior disrespectful towards the board, but I'm willing to go with to ensure that there's a high ground position on that. I found it disrespectful, but I do hear what you're saying, and I'll go ahead and strike that. Anything in the other category? Okay. Therefore, I will reread. That is, my motion is to deny regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. I'll ask for 1-year set off. And again, my reasons are serious and violent offense, trauma to the victim, age of victim, serious bodily injury, criminal history, repeat offender, poor release plan, and I struck the report demeanor during hearing. That is my motion.
Second.
Agree.
Okay, Mr. Siegfried.
Yes?
We've made our decision. Do you need me to repeat it to you?
No, sir. Thank you very much. I will report my findings of this board to my attorney, and I will allow him to deal with you as he sees fit. Have a nice day.
Outstanding. Thank you, sir.